So, as Wes said, this is about using on-farm data to enhance variety trial recommendations. Wes is one of the co-authors, but I'd also like to acknowledge Ed Barnes. This idea really came from him, and it's something I think the group there is a lot of us have been working on some of these gen data and farm data issues, and it's one of the applications that we see for collecting all this data, and one place we think it might have a lot of benefit to cotton producers. And some other authors, John Wanura, Jason Ward, Wes Porter, Kendall Kirk, and Michael Plumley. So this is basically the first sentence out of the Texas Variety Trial Guide for each region. We have several, but it's probably similar in other states. Variety is the most important decision made during the year. So most of you have probably heard that, but I want to emphasize that. You know, once the producer's made that decision, of course, that's a significant investment in the seed since we're generally planting transgenic varieties. That locks him in. He has a genetic potential of that cultivar, and whatever that cultivar will produce is whatever the farmer will, that limits their yield. So the traditional method of conducting cultivar trials is to plant a large number of cultivars in small plots at a research station. I know in Texas they've moved away from this, and that primarily what you see in Texas are these race trials is what they call them, which are on-farm larger plots. I think they're generally 10 varieties or less. They try and plant common varieties between each site. It's the 11th year of doing these, or 2018 was the 11th year, so we just did the 12th year, I believe is correct. If there's a agronomist in here from Texas and I'm wrong, you can correct me. Okay, I do have one. I didn't see you back there, Galen. And I think these numbers are right. You know, one challenge, they planted 52 of these, and you think that's a lot of trials in 2018. I guess the 2019 data is not up just yet. But it only looks like 36 were harvested. 2018 was a challenging year in Texas for many producers, both somewhere it was too wet and had some other issues with drift and damage, and then too dry out west. So that's always a challenge, too. And even though this is done on farm, there's still significant cost. And as we all know, our ag research budgets, particularly where it's state-supported, which is usually funding some of this, that's declining. So we have fewer staff, less support for equipment and travel and those things. And, again, there's the big question. Is that really enough? So a little bit, we're in Texas, and many of you might be aware of this, but I'll just highlight this. There's 12 soil orders. Texas has 9 of them, and I believe cotton is grown in 6. It may only be 5. Some of those are a little more minor. Over 1,300 soil series, so we have significant soil variability. Rainfall ranges from just under 10 inches at El Paso, and we grow cotton in El Paso, and it's about 60 inches at the Louisiana border on the Gulf Coast. We don't quite grow any right there. You know, it's pretty swampy, but moving down the coast a little bit, we definitely grow cotton in areas that are getting about 50 inches of rain on average. We have cotton in the Rio Grande Valley. It's basically frost-free. They do get the occasional freeze. They grow citrus there. It's about 6 months in Amarillo. So, you know, cotton's grown in all these extremes of the state. I don't know, you know, how we just decided to grow as well in all of them, I guess, you know, for different reasons. So with this extreme range in weather and the variability in soil types, there's a likely chance that your farm may not even resemble the most representative trial. So how do we address this? Well, if we look at what our yield components are, our sources of variation, some of you may have heard this. We're talking about genetics, environment, management. You know, I came from the genetic research side. I throw in processing, and that's important in cotton, and their interactions. We look at some studies that are based upon cultivar trials, and this is using the National Cotton Variety Trials to estimate the contributions of genetics and environment. You know, they're not really looking at management factors. Those trials are managed similarly. So this showed that environment alone accounted for about 80 to 90% of the variability in yield. And this is in line with past studies on this. You know, the environment is by far the biggest contributor when it comes to the yield of cotton crops. And that's not surprising for anyone that farms. Now, what's interesting is the G by E interaction, the genetics by environment interaction, may actually be a larger source of yield variability than genetics alone. And so that, of course, has implications for what cultivar you're planting in your location. Now, for many of the quality parameters, genetics and the genetics by environment interactions are a much larger source of variation. Strength has a significant genetic component. Length, it's less so. And we know that things like our nitrogen status and our irrigation or our rainfall that we receive during the cropping season affect that. Micronaire is an interesting one because it confounds two properties, one of which is largely environmental, maturity, and one which is more genetic in terms of fiber fineness. So looking a little more at some of the fiber quality, that's also an issue with how we do cultivar trials. We're usually using small-scale gin samples, ginning them. You know, we were discussing the tabletop gins, the tinsol gin. Now, some past work from the Stoneville Gin Lab showed that those are usually accurate predictors of many fiber quality parameters. We're talking about things like length, strength, and micronair, which are, of course, important in determining the value of the crop. However, one big one is leaf grade. The harvesting machinery is often different. If we're picking it with a plot picker, it's usually an older, smaller machine. We had some interesting discussion in the ginning session yesterday about some of the effects of picker speed and the drum speeds on drum design on leaf grade. So, and we don't use gin cleaning equipment. A tinsol gin, as we were discussing the mechanism, you put a handful of cotton in there, your seed, you know, stays in the roll, your lint comes out the back. There's no lint cleaners, no seed cotton cleaners. So the processing is very different. And leaf is affected by all those things, by our genetics. We have hairy leaf varieties, and even though that's been a challenging thing to understand, we know there's certainly a genetic component and an environmental component as well, and that interaction plays a role. There were some studies done several years ago, Dr. Morgan, that really kind of looked into some of that, and it's a challenging thing, but we know it affects it. Management plays a big role as well in terms of the quality of your defoliation and how well you get the leaves to drop off the crop. Now, high trash levels can affect HVI color. So in Texas, they simply assume a 41-4, that's a 41 color grade, a 4 leaf grade, for determining the value of the crop. You know, in this situation, that's a reasonable thing to do, but it's not necessarily representative of what you'll see as a producer. You know, those guys in West Texas are getting, you know, 21s and 31s. Where we're at in College Station, the 41 is a more common grade. So what do we need if we're going to make some farm-specific variety recommendations now that we've talked about this? Well, clearly, we need our relevant environmental data to our farm location. We also need knowledge of farm management practices. You know, kind of mentioned some things that will affect that, whether it's, you know, fertility or the irrigation or the rainfall that's received that affects the quality and the yield. Also, ginning practices that affects turnout and fiber quality. And kind of the question, you know, doesn't this require predicting the future? How do we know what someone's going to do? Well, the way you would, I think, address this is you'd look at developing a model that would provide the optimal variety selection across some different scenarios. You know, you can tell what your chance of your you can develop a stochastic model where you have assign a probability of a certain amount of rainfall. And basically those inputs, you assign probabilities and you find the variety that would, you know, most likely to give you the optimal return. So the concept of this, you know, one thing, every farm's an experiment. Farmers are all scientists, you know, they're always testing new things. But I will caution, you know, that experiment isn't a proper statistically designed experiment. It really can't be. You know, we don't have randomization, replication, blocking, all the things that we do as traditional scientists to make sure that we have good, you know, data with statistical differences, and we can really say that things are different or not. We have readily available environmental data now. That's something, there's a lot of data available online, and it's a matter of accessing that. And a key point is we're collecting more data on farm and at the gen. So we can get some data off the machine, and we're getting to the point we can get more and more. And as we develop, hopefully, a data standard, we'll be able to pull a lot more of that in. And our machines are data connectivity is what I call it. It's becoming better, where different machines can talk to each other. We can kind of connect different things through the supply chain so we can get some of that information out. And so really the concept is that we can supplement some of these official cultivar trials with on-farm data. So we're still having the replicated and randomized cultivar trials, but we're going to use specific producer data to supplement that. So kind of the first step I see to proving this concept is we're going to take a database of official cultivar trial yields. And we're going to predict, you know, future cultivar trial yields on this. And this is all with past data. And so we're using the different environmental data we have for these sites, and that's soil and weather. I was a little surprised there's not very much work that's been done related to this. Some of the plant breeders have done some of that work looking at the genetic and environmental components, but you know, as far as kind of on the application side of, you know, building some tools for producers, it's not really been done. And we're going to start with yield only. First, it eliminates that processing aspect largely. I mean, yes, turnout plays a role, but we're largely eliminating that. And by using cultivar trials in this, we can minimize the management effect. I won't say it's all the same, but management should be near optimal in many of these cultivar trial plots. They're generally managed according to, you know, kind of best practices for an area. So this is a big data project. We hear that word a lot. So kind of my data sources here. So the cultivar trial data comes from Seed Matrix, which is a web-based application that has a very large database of trial data. Now, fortunately, Cotton Incorporated, I don't know if you normally have to subscribe. Basically, Ed said, here's some data, and it comes from this. And they have a lot of official variety trial data input, and so that's available if you have an account set up with them, which Cotton Incorporated does. So he provided that. Weather, the NOAA National Climatic Data Center has temperature precipitation data for weather stations across the U.S. And of course, we have our soil survey data. Now, both the weather and the soil survey data are stored in publicly available databases. You can go to their website, and they're not the best to use. But there's really a better way for what we're doing. Using the software program R, I don't know if there's any R users. I know we had some discussion in a meeting the other day about it. There's two packages to access both the NCDC data and the NRCS soil survey data. And it's really just several built-in functions to do that. So basically that cultivar trial data, we have our yield, we have our location, and that's a latitude and longitude, and then we have planting and harvest dates. And that's really what we need to get the relevant information out of those databases. We can find the closest weather station using those coordinates, and it's only really two lines of code in the R functions. And the same thing with the soil survey data. For that coordinate, we can pull that soil survey information. So once we have that appended information there, and we're talking about kind of a summary weather data and, you know, our soil description, you know, whether some of that's categorical, you know, the soil order and suborder, some of that there is some texture information. Put that in a yield prediction model. Some common ones, machine learning models, random forest neural networks. We've had some experience in another project with random forests performing fairly well with some agricultural data. The challenge is you've got lots of variables, but not many data points. And that's difficult with many models. You want to avoid overfitting, but random forests seem to generalize well. So where we're at, we still got to do more data cleaning. We're starting to get some results in, but nothing I wanted to present yet. And do some more modeling. And so, if we're successful with this, then we can kind of move forward, in this kind of simplified situation, say, okay, we can predict a variety trial yield, for a known cultivar in a future year, then, we can start applying that with some real on-farm data. And that's all I've got.